What's up, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of Cult Film Cafe. Yes, we are back. And that, of course, is me, Jonathan. And as always, I'm joined by my wonderful partner in crime, Kenzie.
Hello.
Obviously, you have noticed that we've taken a bit of a break. It's been about 5 weeks since we uploaded our last episode. But yeah, we are bringing it back. We have had a wee chat and that and decided that we should return to what we enjoy actually doing. But yeah, there's going to be a few changes, minor changes, nothing big. We're going to try and condense the podcast into a more manageable sort of length while still trying to talk about all the stuff that we normally talk about. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. We're going to trial it for the next few episodes and hopefully it goes rather well. So we're going to aim to have the podcast at about 45 minutes long instead of the hour and a half that they currently are, so we're halving it. But anyway, without further ado, this is Cult Film Cafe, episode 23, and we will be talking about Dirty Harry.
This is about a movie about a couple of killers. Harry Callahan. And a homicidal maniac. The one with the badge is Harry.
Oh!
There were a lot of reasons they called him Dirty Harry. And he kept inventing new ones.
Don't pass out of him yet. No.
That was a pretty good pinch you made yesterday. The chief was pleased.
He was, huh?
Yeah, he really was. He wanted me to tell you, well done.
I'll tell you how deeply moved I am.
How do you like that? I pass along a compliment? You could at least be a little bit polite. It might not even kill you to say thanks.
I'd much rather say thanks to a raise.
Hey, Harry, check communications. Something from Chicago. A gun nut.
I'm putting somebody with you.
Well, you know what happens to the guys that I've worked with. Dietrich's still in the hospital with a bullet in his gut, and Fanducci's dead.
Now, you're working with Gonzalez, or you're not working. Now, that's straight from the fifth floor. You got it?
I know what you're thinking. Did he fire six shots or only five? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I've kind of lost track myself. But being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Doesn't it drive your wife crazy?
Nope.
Yeah, she got used to it.
No, she never did, really.
Well, what then?
She's dead.
Oh, please forgive me.
She was driving home late one night, and drunk across the center line. There's no reason for it, really.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Look, I want you to tell Chico that I understand, you know, him quitting. I think he's right. This is no life for you two.
Why do you stay in it, then?
I don't know. I really don't.
Send Inspector Callahan in.
Mr. Mayor, Inspector Callahan.
All right, let's have it.
Have what?
Your report. What have you been doing?
Oh, well, for the past 3/4 of an hour, I've been sitting on my ass in your outer office, waiting on you.
Damn it all, Harry, that's the mayor you're talking to.
Clint Eastwood. Detective Harry Callahan. You don't assign him.
Stop!
To murder cases. You just turn him loose.
So yeah, an iconic character. Is it an iconic film? We're just about to find out. What do you think, Kenzie?
It most certainly is an iconic film. I've known about this film for a while. If my dad ever goes on about a Clint Eastwood film, it's usually this one. My dad likes this one a lot. In fact, I think recently he watched through every single one. He likes them all. But particularly the first one. And they had always told me that it was very good. but I had never seen it. In fact, I didn't even, right, I thought it, like, from looking at posters, I didn't even realise it was a Clint Eastwood film, and I didn't really know what it was going to be like. I was kind of shocked. I didn't know it had, like, I knew, like, the quotes from it, but I didn't, I just didn't know really anything about it. So this is pretty much now it's a fresh watch fully through. It's the first time I've fully watched it through. I've seen little bits on TV at some points. It's actually on, it was probably a bit ago now, it was probably last year, but I remember it was on TV at some point. So I did see little bits of it, but yeah, this is the first time I was actually watching it. And yeah, I really like this film. Yeah, I like it a lot.
That is not a shocking thing to hear. I thought you'd really like this film. It's the same for me. I obviously know of the character, of the film series, of the lead actor, but I'd never decided to sit down and fully watch it. I suppose, like Kenzie, we're all familiar with certain parts and certain lines from the sort of... See, it's not really a franchise. I mean, the film series, although he plays Harry Callahan, and all the films have all got different names, but we'll probably touch upon that later on. Yeah, I like it as well. I mean, I think it's a sort of product of the time period, really. You don't really get films like this anymore. And I know it's kind of strange. Like, Clint Eastwood at this time was still, like, super famous. He still is super famous now. But he had started to direct films at this point. Obviously, he didn't direct this film. This film was directed by Don Siegel, not Clint Eastwood. But yeah, this is the time where Clint had started to go behind the camera as well, or was just about to and was thinking about it. And I think a lot of his films, really, from then on, or quite a lot of them, have been him directing himself, which I still think's quite a weird concept when you say it out loud.
Yeah. Clint's kind of known now for directing a lot of stuff. I mean, any film that Clint's in now, he's directing. But he seems to be quite a competent director, and people do quite like his films. He's had quite a few films that people really like. I mean, Gran Torino was a big one that people absolutely love. But he still does direct films. I think his films he's been directing recently are less known. Like, he done Cry Macho a few years back, 2019. Wasn't very successful.
Was that 2019?
I'm not entirely sure, but it wasn't very successful. And I recently saw an article saying that Clint Eastwood is directing another film.
Yeah.
And the studio said that this would be his last. He didn't say that. The studio said it. I don't think the studio are very happy with him because his last film bombed. So I don't think they really want to do another film with him. I think they're trying to say this is his last one he's going to get to do.
I suppose, I mean, at his age, you should maybe just be sort of hanging it up. I mean, I'm not ageist. I know that sounds like an ageist comment, but...
I mean, it's a good run. What is his age, is he? 90, 91, 2?
Yeah, he's in his 90s. Early 90s now, yeah.
And
92 now. Yeah. Now it'll be 93 at the end of this month.
But I think I also feel with Clint Eastwood films, you know what you're getting. Even with, like, Gran Torino, which is a really good film, you go in and it's like, yeah, that's, you can tell this is a Clint Eastwood film, not just because he's in it, but, like, just how it goes. I feel like all those films kind of go a certain way. It's like, it's a Clint Eastwood film. It's nothing wrong with that. They're usually good, so. And Dirty Harry, which was not directed by him, of course, was also a really good film. Clint Eastwood has had a crazy career of just amazing films, really. And, like, no one can really deny that.
No, I mean, you can't. Like, he obviously came from his Western background and sort of switched over to films like this where, I mean, sort of neo-noir kind of action-y thriller films. And, I mean, he's stuck around the Westerns, I suppose. I mean,
yeah.
With Unforgiven coming out in, I think, 92, that film came out.
Yep.
Which is probably a film that he's really well known for. I mean, I think it was won Academy Awards and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, obviously he's older now, but I mean, I can understand the appeal of films like this. And I suppose maybe he should have done more of these films or these types of films, I mean, I'm not super familiar with Clint Eastwood's full back catalogue. But yeah, I mean, I suppose you can tell why he'd done five essentially Dirty Harry films. Popular character, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a strange film, though. I mean, it feels like it's not. I mean, one of the sort of things that we quantify whether a film's cult or not is the rewatchability and length, sort of a big thing in that. And I mean, it's 102 minutes, so it's, I mean, like an hour 40, like around that. It could be slightly shorter if you take credits out of it. But it feels quite sluggish at times. I mean, it's quite a simple film, I suppose. So I think that's where you're not changing location and sort of stuff like that. But then again, you don't get a super sort of fat 3-hour movie, which we seem to be getting a lot of 3-hour epics coming to the cinema these days, which is, I don't know why it's kind of being revived. Some aren't going down well, but I mean, some are. A la John Wick 4.
It's doing really well. I'm glad. It's good fun. But yeah, I do actually, this is one that's probably my main complaint with Dirty Harry is 102 minutes. It feels a lot longer. It really does. And it does kind of drag at times. I don't have a lot to complain about with this film, but that is the one thing. And I was like, yeah, even when I was watching at times, I was like, I'm enjoying it, but it does feel kind of long. For most other things, I'm pretty much on board for everything else this film does. One thing I'm a big fan of is how this film opens. I think the opening to this film is amazing. How it opens straight up with... So this film feels very 70s. I was going to tell you that right now. It feels like it really feels like it's from the 70s. Like it just completely just feels like it. It came in 1971, so like right at the start. But it kind of starts with the kind of killer of the film, with like a sniper, and he shoots someone in like a pool. So it goes from there to like then it keeps on going until Dirty Harry ends up at the scene of the crime, pretty much. And it's got this music in the background that I think sounds so good. And the music in this film's great. I usually don't really care for much for the score of older films for the most of the time, but I think the score in this film was really good, and I think it really works with the film. It's really odd, and I quite like it. I think the start of this film really kind of amped me up for what to expect for the rest of it. And the Dirty Harry character, Harry Callahan, he's such a great character. He's very, somewhat of a typical Clint Eastwood character. He's very tough, very kind of abrasive, stuff like that. The reason why he's called, what's he called, Dirty? He's called Dirty Harry for a reason or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but they pretty sure they did bring it up.
They do it's like a bit in the film because he gets a new partner because yes. I think he's current partner's in hospital or something. I don't know. He doesn't want to ride with somebody else, but he gets strong-armed into it, which it ends up being a positive, I suppose, because he does help him with this case. But there's a part where he's following Scorpio, or who he believes to be Scorpio. It's kind of dark and you can't really see the character, and he ends up, it's like he's creeping in somebody's window and these guys come and they start beating him, and his partner turns around and goes, is this how they gave you the name Dirty Harry, because he's like a peeping Tom? But no, that was like the kind of fun part. But then he's called Dirty Harry because he basically does all the dirty jobs, because remember he'd done the suicide jumper. He went up in the cherry picker. I can't remember what the line is exactly, but that's, he does reference why he gets called Dirty Harry there, because he goes up and like basically strong arms a guy. Well, he kind of says jump essentially, and he ends up just grabbing him,
and hits him a bit. He hits him a bit, and everyone's like, "Oh, what are you doing?" Basically, when he saved him,
he saves him. That's. I feel like he's the type of no nonsense cop who's like, he does whatever he thinks is right to get the job done.
Yeah, and yeah. I really like the character. He just doesn't give a fuck. He just does, but he clearly is a cop. He, like, that is his whole thing. There's nothing else. He's devoted his whole life to kind of doing that. And he's just, he doesn't seem super happy in it, but he's stuck in it, and I don't think he'll ever get out of it. I also like how he doesn't seem to like anyone. I think they say in a part of the film that he hates everyone the same. He hates everyone equally, especially Mexicans or something like that. Is his partner Mexican? I can't remember.
His partner's Chico Gonzalez.
Yeah.
But I think he gets, through the film, you can see him becoming more on board with having him as a partner. So yeah, I mean, I think he's just that. He's one of the sort of heavy stereotypes of what police inspectors were back in the day. This is what if you were to draw a stereotype, it would probably be somewhat like Dirty Harry. I would think most people would see that. I just think because this film and the character has probably put a seed in most people's brains about it, and I think most people would get to this character anyway.
Yeah, there's just a lot of good parts in this film. Of course, there's the very famous part when I'm pretty sure he's going to get something to eat, and then people rob. I'm pretty sure they rob like a bank or something. He goes out with his fucking massive revolver. By the way, his gun in this film is huge. It's so big. And he blasts them all, and he goes up to the guy, and he's like, "Oh." He does this whole line about this what gun he's got, and I can't remember it verbatim, but it's like the kind of "do you punk" part. And he says, "Oh
yeah, it's
he's lost count of the bullets." He's like, "Oh, I've lost count, so you want to try? You want to be lucky?"
I mean, quotability is another one of the sort of things that we talk about to deem whether a film is cult or not. This has, I mean, I suppose over the last few films that we've done prior to this, we were kind of in the realm of well-made films that weren't necessarily, I mean, I loved Sex, Lies and Videotape from a technical aspect. I think it's a great film, but there wasn't any amazing like one-liners. But this is like one of these jackpot films where it's got one of the most infamous misquoted lines. It's a bit like Darth Vader's line in Empire Strikes Back that everybody gets wrong.
It's always slightly wrong. It's quite weird because like the people always said it was "Luke, I am your father," but it's "No, I am your father." That one's kind of closer. This one is people think it's "Do you feel lucky, punk?"
It's actually "Do I feel lucky?"
It's "Do I feel lucky? Well do you, punk?"
That's the one. So it's very, very misquoted. But I suppose if it's heavily misquoted, it means that it's a very quotable quote. So
yeah, I just like the part after the guy's like, "I's got to know."
Yeah, like my dad says I never, I never realized that like the quote got said so early into the film, obviously not seeing it before. Obviously it gets said twice in the film, which is another thing I didn't know. It gets said right at the start where he eventually, like, he does the whole spiel, did he fire 6 shots or only 5, because he's got a Smith & Wesson Model 29 revolver, which is only I think a 5 or 6 shot revolver, and he didn't reload. The guy who he's sort of stopping doesn't know. I mean, you're not counting shots. So he kind of makes a decision, and he does the whole thing of this being a 44 caliber Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world. Blow your head clean off, considering he's at point blank range. And that's like, you've got to ask yourself one question: do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk? Misquoted, but good quote. Finally hit the jackpot in a film where I think we both agree that it is a quotable film. There is actually like more quotes in as you get down the Dirty Harry films. There is
there's another one, isn't there?
Yeah, but it's not in this film. It's in another film.
What is it again? I can't forget what it is.
I can't remember. I just didn't put it in my notes because we weren't talking about that specific film.
I always forget what it is, but yeah, there is another kind of big famous one. But even in this film alone, there's quite good lines. I think most of the dialogue in this film is quite good. There's a part in it I quite liked where it's the villain of the film got himself beat up to make it look like Dirty Harry attacked him to try and get him away from him. And the guy, Clint Eastwood's character, Harry, is trying to explain that, oh, it wasn't me, because if it was me, it would have been worse. That's such a good line. It's so good. This film is a pretty good one. By the way, the quote was, go ahead, make my day.
That's the one.
It's similar, but it is different. Yeah, I don't know what film it's from, but it's a later one. Yeah. Do you want to talk about budget and box office?
We can do, yeah.
So, this film from 1971 had a budget, according to Wikipedia and a few other places, it says it has a budget of $4 million, which, I mean, even for the time, I would say that's kind of small, but of course, you've got to adjust it as usual. But the box office it made was quite a lot compared to that. It was 36 million. This film was a huge success.
Yeah, I mean, I do the conversion because I'm that type of weirdo. No, I just do it because it gives people reference. In 2023, the budget would equate to something just shy of 30 million. Lo and behold, we got to another point where films don't really get made for 30 million, but that's what it would be. And the film would have went on and made just shy of $267.5 million. So still highly profitable if it was made in 2023. But I can categorically say that a film of this ilk with a star that big in it is probably north of 100 million these days.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, like I said, it's really hard to equate from films that long ago. I mean, but I look at other places than just Wikipedia. I look at a site called The Numbers and Box Office Mojo to try and see if I can get something a bit deeper, or I go further into the year and have a look. So I think $4 million then was actually higher. It was a higher than average budget, believe it or not. I know it doesn't sound like a lot of money. And this is a stat I've got. If you look at just the top 10 films of that year, only four films had a budget of at least $4 million. And one of them is Dirty Harry. The other three were Fiddler on the Roof, Carnal Knowledge, and Diamonds Are Forever, which is a massive franchise movie. Fiddler on the Roof was a huge success. So basically 40% of the top 10 films were $4 million plus. There was a lot of films around $1 million. So yeah, I think it was quite a sizable budget. And I think if you were to make a film like this now, yeah, you're probably close to, if not north of, 100 million. Let's face it, if Air, the drama about the Air Jordan with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck attached, costs 90 million, then a film like this with more action and more action packed would easily, with a big star, would easily go over a million? Yeah, 100 million. So yeah, it's like a subjective and an objective viewpoint at once. It's really up to you to decide whether like you believe it to be low budget like or not, because it's definitely not a flop. So it's whether you believe it to be a low budget or not, and that's kind of up to you, people's individual interpretation of it.
I mean, technically for the time it's not really, but it definitely wasn't a flop. That's the one thing we can definitely confirm. I would probably say that for the time, that's not a low budget then. If it's higher than most films that came out that year, then it's a good
budget. Don't quote me, it's not like most films here. I didn't have time to go and look at every single film's box office, but it was just, I could get the top 10 and look at them very quickly and just taking a sort of snapshot of there, that was quite interesting. Another thing that we'd normally go on to, I mean, if you're familiar with the podcast, we normally split it into sections. Like I said at the top, we're trying to condense it and make it a much shorter package and still kind of hit the points that we normally talk about. We're hoping that it becomes a bit more sort of streamlined and kind of easier for people to digest. I mean, But yeah, not another one is not well received by contemporary critics and reviewers. This is another one of these films that I think retroactively has obviously been looked upon, and a film that's been out for 50 years, you get so many people, I mean, not people our age, but I mean, older critics will have been able to look at the filler in more and more context as times went on. And I know that there's a lot of retroactive and retrospective reviews, and people re-review things now, because at the time there's it's in the focal point. But I suppose if when you let the dust settle, they can maybe think about it a bit more. I mean, on Rotten Tomatoes, I mean, this film has an 89% fresh rating on the tomato meter based on 54 reviews. I mean, that's the critic side of it. It's a 90% audience score. Based on over 50,000 ratings now, because the film's so old, that's probably why that number's low. But we've had other films with much more people rating the film. On IMDb, it's got a 7.7 out of 10. That's on 160,000 plus ratings. Legendary film critic Roger Ebert gave the film 3 out of 4. And like I always say, I'm an Empire fanboy through and through. I've just signed up to receive Empire magazines in the post again. I'm quite glad I did, because I get special art covers, which are quite cool. But anyway, the reviews from their writers, Bob McCabe, gave the film 4 out of 5 for his review, and Mark Dinning gave the film 5 out of 5 for his Empire essay. So they are really high as well. I mean, I do think that this is a hugely well received film across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very well received pretty much for the most part. However, it was also at the time, this goes into the controversy part of the kind of
keep going. Might as well.
But the film, when it came out, was actually really controversial, sparking debates about things like police brutality. Some people really hated how Dirty Harry was portrayed. People holding banners up that literally is quoted here saying that people had things up saying Dirty Harry is a rotten pig. And people hated how it looked at the police. I don't know how the police felt about it and how police brutality. I mean, if it's police brutality, I'm guessing that's more civilians itself looking at that. But I guess some people in the force probably weren't too keen on it either. Of course, there wasn't just that. There was also the person who portrayed the villain of the film, Andy Robinson, who was the Scorpio killer. He got a lot of death threats because he was very convincing. We've not actually mentioned him a lot in this.
No, yeah, that's true. Podcast. Maybe should speak a bit about him.
He's really good in the film. He seems like a complete nut job, and he's always got this like weird high pitchy voice. And
I think the way he looks helps a lot.
Yeah,
because
he's really
looks
freaky.
Like he's a bit of a scumbag and a bit of a he just looks like a baddie, and maybe not a conventional bad guy. He's got something about him, really good role there, and he is very convincing in the role.
Yeah, apparently they tried to kind of base the killer off the Zodiac killer. I don't know, it seems a bit.
True.
I don't know how much they tried to base off it, because it doesn't seem super close, but apparently they took a lot of inspiration from that. But as for
were going about or were kind of about at the same sort of time when you're writing stuff. I mean, a lot of outside influence will go into things like scripts and stuff, you know, if they tweak it here and there. But yeah, I can see where they're coming from. Obviously, we get a more Zodiac killer based film in 2007 when Zodiac comes out, and it is about the Zodiac killer, but I can see why people might see some things in there.
Other kind of controversies about the film, these ones are later after the film came out, this is just in the years in the future, there's a lot of like copycat crimes that were people actually done, like kind of copied from what the villain done in the film. This is actually true, by the way. It's I don't know how close these people were trying to do the films, but some of them came quite, they definitely got it from the film. a lot of, like, if you've not seen this film, the final act of this film is the Scorpio kidnaps a bunch of children in a school bus. And if you look up about it, you'll see that a lot of people have actually tried doing something similar. Something happened in Australia in 1972. One of the armed men who done it had the last name Eastwood. I don't know. I don't think that ain't coincidence. I don't think stuff like that. They just kidnapped children. They didn't do a bus, but someone else in 76 did actually kidnap a bus full. So, and there's another thing as well in 1981, which is Germany, which apparently there was another kidnapping of a 10-year-old girl. It's kind of rough, very rough stuff, and you hate to see shit like that. What do you really blame there? Do you blame the film? I don't think that's very fair. These people who did it were obviously fucking insane, horrible people that would have done something anyway, but it's kind of rough. It's not a great thing to have when you, like, I imagine how that makes, like, most people who worked in the film feel and stuff like that. It's kind of a bit rough, but at the end, what can you really do?
It's hard when you're making films. Obviously, you don't want people to be copying things like that, but unfortunately, there is a lot of kind of loose cannon and people that have got their brains wired wrong out there, and it's not really much. And I suppose it's a bit harsh to blame it on the film, and obviously that being part of the controversial nature towards it, you know. I think also, like, subject matter of the film with essentially a dirty cop probably was quite controversial in the day as well. And I think that's why, according to my notes and where I'd sort of got my information from, that's why pretty much every actor that had been offered the role turned it down because of that reason. They didn't want to be a dirty cop character, you know. Cultural impact and legacies, I mean, the sort of sixth and final one that we talk about, and we've kind of touched upon that already, you know. I mean, this film spawned multiple sequels. I think there's five total. So you had Magnum Force in 73, The Enforcer in 76, Sudden Impact in 83, and the Deadpool in 88. And I would also argue this is easily one of the most recognisable characters in film history, and played by probably one of the biggest film stars of the last 50 to 60 years, if you include the whole time span. You know, Clint Eastwood is just a name synonymous with films and the film industry.
I mean, yeah, like, if you say to someone, like, give me a Clint Eastwood character, most of them would probably originally go with, like, The Man with No Name. But if you ask, like, a second one, I'm telling you, that second or third choice is going to be Dirty Harry.
100%.
It's a really popular character.
Yeah, 100%. So, yeah, I mean, I suppose when we're doing the whole rewatchability part, I mean, that's when we talk about length, and we did say it can feel a bit long at times, but it is a relatively short film. I think these kind of neo-noir films, I think pacing is a bit of an issue. I mean, I'm a big fan of Chinatown, although I don't condone anything that Roman Polanski has ever done outside of and his own extracurricular activities and shit he does. He's a bit of a scumbag, don't get me wrong, but Chinatown's a film that I really, really do like. It's a film that would easily make my top 50 films of all time, probably. I've never sat down to think about that, but just off the top of my head, I really like it. And that was a sort of neo-noir thriller that came out a few years after this, and there was a bit of a revival of noir around this time. Yeah, and I feel like pacing is something that gets a bit difficult, I suppose. I don't know if it's just because of, if it's a genre thing. I would need to go and watch loads of them to give you my opinion on that, like, fully. But yeah, I feel like there's something there. I feel like it, I mean, it is rewatchable, though. I think there's enough in the film. I think there's people that probably, like, fans of the film that are going to watch it regularly. I don't think it's the type of film that you would pencil in for like once a year, like where some people will be like, oh, like I'm going to watch Goodfellas once a year forever, or Home Alone, like Christmas Day. Like, it's not that type, but I feel like there's people out there that have definitely seen this film north of 10 times.
And absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that makes a film rewatchable. I mean, if you're going to watch it that many times. I mean, how many times have you watched a film and went, I'm never watching that again? Probably like 80% of the films that you watch are films that you've only ever watched once. Because that's like true. They don't merit a rewatch, or you just didn't find enough in it. So, but this definitely does have. I mean, I think it's really well directed. It's a really simple film. It's shot really well. Uzi's style, actually, great leading performance, great secondary performance by Andy Robinson as Scorpio. So I think if you factor all that together, you end up with actually a really, really good, in fact, a great film. In all honesty.
Yeah, absolutely. I just love the whole feel of this film, really. Some shots in this film as well are really great. There's a shot that always, it's the one that always comes to my head, because I'm not entirely sure how they did it. It just looks so, I think it's such a great shot. It's when he finally catches like Scorpio the first time, and like is it a football pitch? It's one of them. I can't remember what time, but it's like a big pitch. And he like stands on his leg.
Football pitch.
And he stands on his leg, and the camera like pulls out completely straight out of from where they were, goes straight out of the pitch to like a helicopter view, pretty much. And I think I've never seen a shot done the way they'd done it like that in that film. I thought for the time that was an amazing shot to try and do. Stuff like that. I think on rewatch, I think you get a lot more. You can get a lot out of this film. It's aged, but it's aged really well, to be honest. Like, for the most part. So yeah, I would easily rewatch this again and probably watch the sequels.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of them. I think I'll get around to watching the sequels as well. So yeah, just a real solid piece of filmmaking. And I think there's a lot of them on this list that are still to come. We are going to plough through them. We are here to stay. This is us. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always. So, yeah, this is where we will give a film a rating. You know, we're trying to condense it, make it shorter. So, yeah, let's rate the film out of 5 popcorn buckets, like we do here on the podcast. Do you want me to go first? Who's first, me or you?
I'll go first. I'm pretty dead set on what I'm going to give it. This film for me is easily a 4. I think it's 4 out of 5 popcorn buckets. It's a very good film. I really enjoy it. I think on rewatch I might even like it more. I think it's a very good film. Strong performances. A film of its time that's still enjoyable to this day. Love the score in this film. I don't know why I seem to like it so much, but I do. Some of the shots are really interesting, how they film things, the kind of suspensions in certain scenes, stuff like that. Every time Scorpio is about to shoot a victim, the way they film it and everything, it makes it very suspenseful, very enjoyable. A lot of good quotes. The action when it's in it is quite kind of good. Good final to the film. It's just great, to be honest. It's very good. Like I said, my main criticism and why I can't give it any higher than a 4, I think, is the pacing. It does feel slow, and you will, for me anyway, I definitely do feel it. And that was the only thing that took a little bit of enjoyment out for me, because the pacing isn't... I don't know. Could it have been better? I don't really know. Maybe. But for me, I just felt a bit slow. So I am dead set on a 4. Definitely go watch it if you've not seen it. And if you're a possible fan of these type of kind of neo-noir crime films, or just Clint Eastwood, it's very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're on the same page here. I mean, I think it's a 4 as well. I think it's just a real, really, really solid film. I mean, anything more than that, I think it would maybe be a reach, but I think a 4 is where it should be. I mean, I think it's one of the better films that we've done so far. I think it's a bit strange, obviously, but we're in a sort of out of 5 sort of style rating here, we can give halves as well. But I was a bit shocked the other day there to find out that you can't rate by the point on IMDb. It's just an average. That's how films get points on them. It's just 1 to 10. I thought you could go and itemise it. And maybe that's the weird thing, because say you end up with 50 four-star films, how do you then, what's the best? Because you can have, 200 four-star movies, but there would be an order at some point. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, it's just a really, really good film. Obviously, the pacing Kenzie brought up, that's a great for me. I did mention it earlier. But no, solid directing, two leads that were great. And yeah, it's got some of the most iconic lines in movie history. So yeah, if you've not watched it, definitely go and watch it. It's a 4 out of 5 popcorn buckets across the board. So yeah, that leads us to finally pondering the question, is it a cult film?
Yes, it does. I don't know about you, but I'm not too sure. I really haven't.
I am 100% in the same sort of headspace as that.
Because I don't know. Judging by a few things that we spoke about it, at the time it definitely wasn't. And now maybe slightly, but at the same, I'm kind of seeing this one more. It's another one. It's like it's kind of more classic.
So
but is it fully classic?
I don't know. It's weird because I've got it. If you base it on the metrics or the rules, quote unquote, that we use here, the six rules of the podcast, which we have spoken about, rewatchability, low budget, short box office slot, quotability, not well received by contemporary critics, short reviewers, controversial topics, subjects and themes, and the cultural impact and legacy. It's 42 in favour of yes in those categories. So if you're basing it on pure numbers, it should be a cult film. But I don't think it's as easy as that. It's not as simple as that. And I know that pure numbers say yes, but it's not as cut and dry as that. And the reason, I came up with the idea of the podcast and sort of tried to think about metrics about cult films, but even when we do it, some films kind of feel a bit weird when we do it this. I mean, I have here something that I believe is right. I feel as though the character has got a cult status in more than the film. And I think it's more because it's Dirty Harry and Harry Callahan and it's there's more films with the Harry Callahan in it. I think that's the kind of iconic stroke sort of cult status in film. But I don't necessarily feel as though the film is cult. I don't know. The jury's out for me in this one. That's where my head went when I was thinking about it. This was weeks ago as well. We've taken a bit of time to get on to record this. So I still feel the same. I don't think even in those weeks now, thinking about it out loud, that it's changed my mind. I think the character is the one with the sort of the status here and not necessarily the film.
I think that this film probably isn't. I think this film really is a classic film. I can see what you're saying about the character, but I think the character is that iconic.
Yeah.
That iconic that is, I would say he's a classic character. However, if you go down the line of sequels, I think that's when you get into the cult part for Dirty Harry. I think a lot of people just watch Dirty Harry. I don't think everyone watches Sudden Impact, The Deadpool. I think when you're getting to ones like The Deadpool and stuff like that, they're definitely cult.
Yeah, because it's not everyone goes to watch them. I think the popularity of the character is probably fading over time. Because they've went back, you go back to the well so much, I mean, it's happened, I don't want to bring up the MCU, but that's what's happened with the MCU now. It's they've went back to the well so much that this new phase is just totally bombing, realistically. It's not doing anywhere near what they thought it would. And that might be because there's a lot of familiar characters not currently in it and actors that you do. But also, I think sometimes you go back to the well too much. And I think Clint Eastwood at the time was in his early 40s playing Dirty Harry originally. Get to fast forward to 1988, he's almost 60. and we're kind of on the cusp here with the Keanu Reeves. I loved John Wick, but I feel as though he was aging out of the role, and I think that can happen. And I think, like, yeah, I do agree with you. I think kind of the later films, less people have watched than it probably is more cult. But this original one, I'm probably with you. I don't think it is. So I've made my mind up. No, it's not a cult film, even though it wins 42 in favour. But anyway, we agree, it's not a cult film. But if you differ and you can swear us, I did also have notes saying that, I mean, if it is a cult film, then it would easily be in the top 100 easily. But I don't think I'm going to place it anywhere currently because we're saying no and we both agree. So yeah, we agree across the board. Not only did we both give it the same rating, we both agree that it's not a cult film. I don't know how often that happens on the podcast. Probably not. Probably not a lot, because we'll probably differ in rating.
Ratings. I mean, I think we agree a lot of time on cult or not.
Yeah.
Ratings a bit different, but no, this one was just solid enough to be like it's a four. I think like some films I kind of struggle to rate. This one's like I watched it and I was like, yeah, that was a four hands down, really.
Yeah.
Some films are just easier to rate than others.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. That is episode 23 on Dirty Harry. We are back. We shall have regular uploads for you. We hope you are enjoying this shorter format. We'll run it for a few episodes and see. But I think this has been a bit sort of swifter. And I feel though as though we've touched upon a lot of things that we would touch upon anyway. And we're going to save a bit of time. So yeah, if you would like to go out and check out past episodes of the podcast, you can do by searching Cult Film Cafe wherever you get your podcasts. I would recommend listening to Sex, Lies and Videotape. I think it's probably one of the best podcasts we've done. That's based on my own personal viewpoint. Kenzie, would you shout out an episode that people should check out of the podcast?
I'm quite a fan of the Robocop one.
Well, there you go. Sex, Lies and Videotape and Robocop, you should check both of them out and all the other podcasts that we've done, but those two specifically. Yeah, and if you would like to go and give us a wee follow over on Instagram, that would be great. We are at Cult Film Cafe. We're basically at Cult Film Cafe everywhere. So yeah, that is it for this episode. So it's a goodbye from me.
And it is an au revoir from me.
Podcast out.